work, does it? No, it doesn't. Anyway, just a real kind of jumping around.
We're in a trading war with them now.
Yeah, how could, you
because
know.
Because of this other.
Yeah. And why are they even trading, you know, why, if it was really a socialist country, it would find other countries to trade with than the biggest, most powerful capitalist country in the world. It'd be like giving money to your enemy or giving things to your enemy. It wouldn't make sense, you know. And it would just be because, you know, the capitalists will come back and overtake you like they did in Russia.
They turn around and say, well, we'll just cut the precious metals that you need for your military and for what have you.
Which would be a good thing.
You know?
That would be a good thing, actually.
But they're not looking at it in that perspective. They're looking at it, you know, you want to, you know, raise tariffs on us. Well, trust me, we'll get back.
Oh, by the way, when you were saying about...
And now they're doing it in New Mexico.
Yeah, I know. And Mexico caved, kind of. What's his name again?
I know him by the guy in Moreno Party, but I forgot
his name. No, what's the Mexican president's name?
I forgot his name. I just know him by the...
Adelo,
something like that. But he's in the Moreno Party, which is the party.
Yeah, the Moreno Party in...
to the left of in Mexico. The PRI and PAN.
Supposedly, yeah. It's left of PRD now, even. PRD got discredited by being in power and not doing... in certain places, not doing enough. And other stuff, but anyway, so in Los Angeles, I've been coming across a lot of information. This is actually from February, but I found more recent stuff. I just didn't bring it in, didn't get it organized in time. Of this growing homelessness crisis in Los Angeles, and including a record number of people dying on the streets, homeless. So this is an article from February 2019, end of February 2019, from. CBS News, and apparently they did a documentary priced out LA's hidden homeless this year sometime. And they start off with this guy that he's a life skills coordinator helping homeless people, but he himself ended up homeless because his rent went up $200 a month in LA. Now he's an estimated 9,000 newly homeless in Los Angeles living out of his car. And I've seen these videos of, I saw one video someone like took from a moving car or maybe a motorcycle or bike of a homeless encampment that seemed to stretch for miles. Miles and miles and miles. It was really amazing. I mean, in a horrible way. And then I've seen pictures of parking lots filled with people living in their cars.
Like Hoover tents, they call them back.
Yeah, Hoovervilles, but tents, cars.
This is Trumpvilles now.
And why do you need a car in L.A.? Because what we were talking about a minute ago, the transit system, which I've read is like getting better, but overall it was destroyed.
It used to be the best in the world.
Yeah, it used to be great.
It used to be the best.
Before the 40s, and they destroyed it all, yeah. Before the 50s, maybe, I think it was, early 50s.
Throughout the 20s and 30s, it was the best system you can imagine.
Yeah. So you need that car to survive in L.A., and you need it really in any city, even in Boston, even in New York, I would say, to get certain places. Your schedule might work out or your job might work out that you just need a car. The transport doesn't work enough. That's hard to say in New York because it actually is 24 hours and stuff. In most places, it isn't. You were mentioning France, though.
Did I tell you I ended up in Brighton Beach? How did I end up in Brighton Beach? Little Odessa.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, when I first got to Boston.
Oh, the D-line. Okay, never mind. Because I'm so used to red, green, and that's it, which is simple.
When I first got to Boston, I ended up in Lynn Central Square. Lynn trying to find Central Square, Cambridge. How about this bus going over a huge bridge over the water?
You were on a commuter rail?
No, it was a bus. There's a bus.
That
goes to Lynn.
Okay, so you took the blue line, got off at Wonderland, somehow
I took a bus from somewhere, ended up in Central Square, Lynn, instead of Central Square, Cambridge, which if you're local, that's really quite a mistake.
Yeah.
And then I realized what I was doing, and I'm like, okay, I'll just take the bus back. But of course, it didn't run again for like an hour. So I'm standing there in the middle of Lynn, the bus station, you know, or whatever that was. I don't even remember this so long ago what kind of place it was, but it was not the friendliest place. And I was like, I got to get back to Central Square, Cambridge. Anyway,
you're next to General Electric there.
Yeah. Yeah, but I've been there actually on protests, but for the union there. But actually, there was something you said earlier about something crowding the skies, the helicopters. But what are all this drone stuff is driving me crazy. They want to do this drone stuff everywhere. That's going to pollute the skies like crazy. I'm not saying that the drones might run on batteries or something, but the eye pollution, the noise, you know?
You hear what Amazon is working on now?
They're working on a lot of evil stuff.
So here you are at home. All of a sudden, I have a drone.
Yeah.
Delivery's here.
Yeah.
Oh my God, we're going back to the Fifth Element. Remember movie, Fifth Element?
Yeah, the Chinese
food. We're already there.
Yeah, but also it's the, but see, that's a bad thing.
You're going to have this kind of George Jetson thing happening, you know.
Yeah, with a lot of crashes. A lot of noise, pollution, and crashes, and it's not going to be good. I don't want to look up and see.
Well, there was an airline that one of those drones was being flown, and went right into the engine.
Yep.
In some city, I think it was in Florida.
Yep.
Thank God they got right back on the ground. Without being, you imagine that your engine goes.
Well, here's the other thing. What do you think the capitalists are going to do with drones? Oh, I got to give the legal ID. We're WMFO Medford. That's WMFO in Medford. They're going to use the drones. Excuse me, moving away from the mic here a little bit. They're going to use the drones to spy on people, which they already are probably. They're certainly using them for military reasons overseas.
Oh, I've seen that happen.
They're going to start doing that here.
Yep.
So top of the hour, let's do some. Let's do some public service announcements.
That's why I have to give credit to Joe Biden. What's his name? Not Joe Biden.
Don't
sorry.
Give credit to Joe Biden.
No, I meant Snowden. Snowden.
Yeah, Snowden and Assange and everything. They're just Chelsea Manning. There's martyrs right now happening all over the country. On every prison, there's innocent people. Some innocent people. And
is he still in Russia?
Snowden is still in Russia. Yeah. They've stopped reporting on him, which is probably a blessing in some ways. But his freedom of movement and his ability to go back to where he's from is the government won't let it happen.
I wonder how they're treating him over there.
I don't know. I haven't read about that recently. Probably better than they would be treating him here, I'll say that. Oh, well, I just did something really bad to this whole thing. Okay, that's going to take a while to fix. Anyway, let's go to this public service announcement on firearm safety. Four rules of gun safety. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule zero, all guns are always loaded, meaning you should treat them as such. Rule number one, never point a gun at anything you're not willing to destroy. Let me rephrase that one. Never point a gun empty or a real gun, empty or not, at any person. Unless you're in a self-defense situation.
Unless there's a fascist is coming at you with an MG-42.
Unless it's war.
Then I think that's your time.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, I used to do hunting, and even having the barrel of the gun, like, swing past a person, unloaded or loaded, was a huge crime. Like, you would get yelled at for, like, an hour for that if that happened.
Not Dick Cheney.
You just can't do it. No, not Dick Cheney. He's allowed to shoot
people. He shot
his friend,
and his friend said, I'm sorry. Yeah. Like, what are you sorry for? You're the victim.
Rule number two, remember we started at zero. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. And rule number three, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. Hey, there's one for the cops. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it.
They were sure about their targets. They just don't care.
Yeah, I know. Well, I hope they... I don't even know if they get to the sure point. Also, one that we've done before... but I like it. I like it a lot. And I don't think it's changed. I mean, this is probably like 2 years old, but I don't think the facts have changed.
They've probably gotten worse.
Well, remember this one, right? Numbers to think about. Worldwide prison populations.
Those numbers have gone up.
Yeah. The United States has the world's... Now, you got to listen to this one carefully because it's really bad. The United States has the world's largest documented prison population, both in absolute and proportional numbers. Now, that means like... they give the number here. Let's see. Where is it? Da-da-da-da. 2.2 million prisoners at the time of the writing of this thing were behind bars in the United States. So that's the largest total amount. Then you have a rate of, that's the proportional terms, of 730 per 100,000 people. By the way, and then if you added people on parole or somehow messed up with the system, it gets to like ridiculous proportions of people being like monitored, watched, can't vote because they're felons, you know, all this other stuff. It's just ridiculous.
House arrest.
And then to give this some context, China, which is a huger country, much four times more populous than the United States, is a distant second with 1.51 million people at the time of this writing in prison at a rate of 117 per 100,000, much less than the United States. Russia has the second highest rate, 606 per 100,000 for a total of 865,000, but 2.2 million versus 865,000, number two. That's sad day for the United States. Numbers to think about, a message in the public interest from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio. And I'll save that, putting that back. That's all right. I'll do that later. Let's see, though. I do want to move something here. All right. So anyway, so a little bit more about this L.A. homeless crisis. And it's not just L.A. by any means. But this L.A. is like a huge city, right? I've been there. You been out there?
Yes.
Yeah. So you're like, what? They don't have enough places for homes? I mean, is this because the rich people are taking up all the land or something? I mean, yeah, on top of the hills or something? I don't know. It's really weird. But it also just shows it's not really about available land. It's about planning. It's about capitalism. So let's see. After the financial crash of 2008, housing prices actually dropped in LA as they did nationwide, and deep-pocketed investment firms, here we go, the capitalist part, deep-pocketed investment firms started buying up the undervalued properties. The city has few protections in place for tenants and gives landlords wide latitude with regard to what they can do with their properties, quote unquote. Tell me if you're a landlord and you own a building, how can you live in every apartment at once? You can't.
No.
That's the absurdity of private ownership of social things under capitalism, whether it's a factory or a building or anything else. Yeah, under socialism, there'll still be private property, I think. Your personal property. But personal property is different than private
property.
Remember
that story you told me about what happened in China?
Yeah.
Your friend was telling me.
Yeah, yeah.
Your friend was telling you how, it wasn't so this and this and that. Like, we think what they did is they came and said, no, you can do fine with this segment of the building. Yeah. The rest is going to go towards, housing for everyone else.
Yeah, I had a friend from Shanghai whose parents lived through the Chinese Revolution in 1949. And one of the big problems in China was housing and homelessness and so on, along with just outright starvation. And the revolution, although it didn't turn into a real, democratic socialist revolution, it made gains. It did some good things. And one of the good things it did was it redistributed and built a lot of new housing. And the redistribution part happened in her parents. They lived in a big apartment building. For the time, big, like probably 2-3 stories and wide. And the owner of the building was told after the revolution, they went around and tried to negotiate with the landlords they couldn't negotiate with. Some wouldn't negotiate, and they were dealt with. But the ones you couldn't negotiate with, he was willing to negotiate. And they said, look, we'll give you the best apartment, the corner apartment in this building, and you can live there forever. But the rest of the building that you say you own is now owned by the people, and people are going to live there, that need to live there. Because I guess, the people that are there now and anyone else that needs to move in. And he was basically like, okay. and they would still run into him after that happened, like all the people in the building, like her parents. And he was fine. He lived actually a nice, healthy, long life, basically in retirement.
Yeah, there was no hostility between him and the tenants.
He couldn't do his landlord business anymore.
Yeah.
But he lived well, and no one took his apartment or anything.
A material thing. It's called a home. That's it.
Yep.
Well, we can't say that in this kind of system.
No, we're living on the edge here, unfortunately.
My landlord goes up a few $100, I'm on the street just like
this
that person
guy. Yeah,
in LA.
$200 a month. You have a combination of banks and investment firms buying up undervalued properties. You have few protections for tenants. Landlords can do what they want. So then the economy started to improve, quote unquote. Corporate owners of rental properties have used the weak laws to their advantage to vacate newly purchased buildings, to renovate units, and to drive up rental prices even higher. So wages haven't kept up with rising rents. They quote someone here saying, quote, so what you're seeing is housing costs and the cost of living far outpacing what people are earning. That sounds familiar living around Boston. From 2010 to 2018, here's some more facts on that, median rental prices for a one-bedroom apartment in Los Angeles increased 84%. Within 8 years, it went up 84%, while median wages during the same period rose only 11%. People who get priced out struggle to make their way back into a stable place to live anywhere in L.A. So even temporary Band-Aid solutions include, we're in need of 550,000 units of housing. They're quoting a housing activist. But instead of building that housing, they're building luxury housing. And once a person leaves whatever stable housing they're in, they have very few options left for them because they can't afford the luxury housing. So according to the U.S. Federal Reserve's report on the economic well-being of U.S. households in 2017, it's a government thing, or Federal Reserve, 4 out of every 10 Americans cannot afford a $400 emergency. Let's raise our hands on that one. That's me.
I have no
emergency. That's me, yeah.
No emergency funds.
Without going deeper into debt is the unspoken part, end of that, or becoming homeless or whatever it takes. Now, we've talked about that before on the show. There's different figures about that. That is really scary, and that's a real thing. In Los Angeles County, that's 4 million people that are living on a financial knife edge. Many of those who fall into homelessness try to maintain the other aspects of their life and are hidden from plain view. So then I give an example. Ana Estrada lives in Santa Clarita, a suburb about 1 hour's drive northwest of L.A., an hour away. She's employed as a social services caseworker. They don't ever get paid much. That's really sad. Her rent went up for $1,000 to $3,000. Can you believe that? $1,000 to $3,000, forcing her to move. How do you pay $3,000 a month in rent? The cheapest place she could find was $1,800. But then she suffered complications from a medical condition that ended up losing her job. Now she and her 13-year-old daughter are living out of their car. Like the person mentioned in the beginning, Kevin Recinos, she's one of the many hidden homeless who now inhabit the streets across L.A. County, you know, living in their car, pretend, you know, still going. She doesn't have a job. This Kevin guy still has a job. So you could be living in your car, getting up all smelly and everything, going to work, trying to find someplace to take a shower, maybe.
Yeah, like a Salvation Army or something.
Maybe you can afford a gym membership, just use the shower or something, you know, or maybe go to a truck stop, maybe use the shower.
Well, I don't know how that. YMCA somewhere. Yeah.
I don't know how the truck stops work. I think I did that once.
It depends what cost part of
money.
The country.
Yeah. Estrada makes sure her daughter gets off to school and softball practice on time in her BMW SUV. She managed to get a good nice car at one point when she was working. She says the aging luxury car is the last thing she owns, and it's the only kind of shelter keeping her and her daughter safe at night. You know, I thought about that. She goes, I have definitely fallen far. I thought about, like, you see people are buying more cars now than they can afford, myself included, right? Meaning car, like, size. I don't mean multiple cars. I mean, like, car size, you know?
Yeah.
Well, there's a reason for that. They're making a lot of cars like that. They're slightly cheaper than they used to be, right? You get these small SUVs or whatever, right? But here's the facts, though. The average car loan I read the other day is like up to $31,000. That's the loan. That is
huge. How much are these cars worth now?
Exactly. Buying a car now costs regularly, like for a new car, easily over $30,000. You're easily into $40,000s now. A used car, which you used to be able to get $3,000, $2,000, you can still find something like that, but it's going to need repairs like immediately. That's up to $15,000, $20,000. They put all these bells and whistles on it. We'll give you a 2-year warranty. We'll give you a long warranty and all
this
other stuff.
I'm still in my head. I'm still in 20 years
me
ago.
Me too.
$25,000, that's a lot of money.
Part of
now
my
you're
head.
You're talking about 40 and up. Yeah.
Part of my head is back there. Part
might
of
as well just buy a house with that money.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And you can't. Right, the average, the median. I think it's the median price in Boston area. Might be average price. Is over $400,000 now for a house, single family home. So obviously people are in deep debt.
You don't even have the option of, let's say, multiple apartments that you can rent out in order to pay your mortgage.
No,
that's just a single house.
Those would be more expensive even because they would take that into account.
Yeah.
So now you have like. Also, you have car loans. I think this other statistic I read was that car loans are being defaulted at a much higher rate than they were at a previous time. I don't remember the comparison point, but they're being defaulted on. And they had some figure for that was really high. And I can understand that totally. I got a useless car sitting in my driveway. Can't afford to get it fixed. I'm still paying the car loan on it. You know, if I was really smart, I wouldn't pay it anymore. But I don't want to ruin the credit, you know, ruin the credit thing. It's really sad, really sad. And then when it's paid off, which is going to be in October, no one will buy it. You know, I only got like 90.
Oh, you'll sell it for real cheap.
No,
cheap
they don't. Dump. They don't buy
not
it
even.
For nothing. No,
not even
scrap. I drove in a we
not
drove
even the scrap
we
metal.
Drove in a 2000. No, they don't. They know they have you. They know they have you. I'm going to give it away for free instead of take $90. I got like $90 literally.
Does it even
for
work?
A turn-in car? Yeah.
It works,
but it's got something with the exhaust system that
so
is
you can kind of like donate it to
worse.
Some organization.
Yeah, they take it in any condition. Yeah. But what I'm trying to say is that we drove into a car that still worked. that was halfway decent, although very old by car standards, over about, actually it was only about 10, 11 years old, but we had a lot of miles on it. Toyota Matrix, they don't even make those anymore. We drove that in for turn, and they only gave me $90 for it. And I took it because $90 is $90 to us.
$90?
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, let's see. And they're going to sell that, even though it's really old, they'll still sell that. I had years ago, I drove, remember that red Honda I had years ago with the cool bumper stickers on it? This boxy car.
Yeah.
Drove that in, that really went pachoo, 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 into the lot to buy a new car. It was so bad. And they still gave us more than this last place. They gave us like $200 for it, right? And they were apologetic about it. But I'm like, okay. My friend of mine lived, and I got the car down at in Boston. A friend of mine lived in Dorchester, saw the car on the street about a month later. And it was unmistakable because it still had the bumper stickers on it.
Yeah.
So I imagine they sold that thing probably for about $2,000 or something to some poor.
Exactly.
I hate that.
Or the first timer, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The kid, you know, yeah. Hey, this is my, you know, whatever. It's your first time car.
And Hondas, they see a Honda, they think they'll be able to fix it and stuff, but it's not.
Actually, Hondas are the real good cars. They do outlast.
I like the one we have now, but it cost a lot. It cost a lot of money, you know? And they all cost a lot of money. Now the Hondas cost a lot of money.
Now yours was what? That Honda was in the 90s? Like a 90s?
Oh, that thing was from the, I don't know what. I bought it from
maybe
a friend.
The 80s?
I bought it from a friend for $1,000 and he ripped me off. He was like, a friend of mine sold it to me, and I was desperate for a car. I hadn't had a car in Boston for a long time. And I had a car from a friend who gave it to me for free. That car, that was a long time ago in the 80s. That car bit the dust. She moved out of the country. And then I go without a car a long time. And, you know, places I could afford to live are like out in East Somerville where the subway isn't as good. There's no subway except like one stop until this new stuff they're doing. So I'm like, I needed a car just to like go grocery shopping. So I'm desperate for a car. So I get this, buy it from a friend, $1,000 or $950 or something like that. And then, you know how sometimes you hang up the phone and the other person doesn't hang up and you hear what they're saying? I heard him talking to his wife and saying, oh, we did pretty well there. He's a friend of mine. He ripped me off. I couldn't hold a grudge because I'm like, I don't know. And then I turned the car on back when I was at his place and it was so dusty that I turned the AC on, dirt literally flew into my eye. So I had to go to the doctors too and get an eye appointment. And then the optometrist was mean jerk. This is like one thing after another. And when you're poor, or not poor, I'm not really, I wasn't really poor, but I was like having a hard time. When you're poor-ish or poor, nothing, it's not just one thing. Everything goes wrong at the same time.
One, two, and three.
Always. It comes in threes, always. So I'm like, I can't see. My eye is tearing. I can't see. I go to this thing, and this guy says, this guy's trying to tell me I have a disease in my eye. And I go, no, I actually almost saw the thing hit my eye. It was so fast. Zoom.
It's dirt.
And he goes, he wouldn't believe me. I'm there for like 15 minutes. And then finally he admits, oh, yeah, okay. After like torturing me, looking at it, he admits, oh, yeah, I guess it's dirt. They don't like being wrong. Last thing, that remember I mentioned the
See, they play God. I swear.
My doctor
does the same thing. It's just like, dude, it hurts. Like, do you not understand? Oh, come on. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Remember the CT scan I mentioned before?
Yeah, the $50 one.
Yeah, $50 one. So first of all, they don't tell me it's going to cost $50. So I just go in and they charge
those
me.
Those things
for
are expensive, right? As far,
if they're not really. It's old technology now.
Oh.
That's old technology. It's just that thing where they put you the round thing.
I went through this.
That's old.
I had to
got
do the,
better stuff.
They give
now.
You this thing where you press the thing. It's like I had enough. It's 3 hours already. Just so, Jesus Christ.
I didn't get one of those. I just had to
they
say,
give
stay
you a thing
perfectly
where they
still.
Just press here. Just press
yeah,
here.
I didn't
for
get
you,
that.
And I'm like,
yeah, I didn't get that.
It's like a stress test. It's like, enough. 3 hours is enough. I can't take it.
They told me to stay perfectly still. That was really hard. Really, and that, something like not breathing at one point, that was really, really hard. Like for a short...
No, me, it was really. Like, I had an itch. I was like...
Yeah, you can't scratch it.
Sir, can you just come over here? And if you don't want me to move, I'm going to end up doing it myself.
Well, the other thing, listen to this. The doctor, so this is like urgent care. This is like on a weekend. God forbid you have to see, when I was a kid, doctors saw you on Saturdays. That was a big day for doctors and dentists. And now, I don't know about dentists, but doctors.
Well, I heard in France, they come to you.
Yeah, definitely. Oh. Doctors, they, yeah, house calls. We used to have house calls in the United States back when everything was regulated and everyone had Blue Cross Blue Shield. Doctors came to your house and they worked on Saturdays. Now, weekends are called urgent care. So I go to the urgent care place that's not very close to where I live. Long drive. Go there. See a doctor. There's $25 out of my pocket just for that, which kills. I can't wait. If we ever get universal health care and anyone complains about it, I want to slap them in the face. If it's the right conditions, I will just be like, yeah, I used to be a doctor and I used to make a lot more money. You know, I used to work for a health insurance company and now I'm out of a job. Well, I don't, you know, that one I don't like, we have to, when we switch to universal health care, which I hope we do, we're gonna have to find jobs for everyone. Retraining.
Retool, that's it.
Full pay until you get another job. But if it's someone that's like, you know, higher up. Anyway.
Like Baker. Get out of here. Sir Charles. What, you manager, what?
Sir Charles made his money off sick people. Think about that. Everyone that wants to call him Charlie.
Was it Vanguard?
It's the one that's torturing me.
Yeah.
So I go to a Vanguard doctor. I get charged $25 for the guy to say, this is the point of the story, he says to me.
Well, you already know.
I had a swelling under my, like I thought it was my lymph nodes or something really serious. It turns out it was, quote, some of your saliva glands are swollen. Oh, what do I do? Suck lemon drops and drink a lot of water. Oh, okay.
I could have done that.
Is this
that,
the 1400s? You know? Are you going to bleed me next? Where's the pills? You know, I got no antibiotics. I got nothing. So, but the first doctor, this was the second doctor after I had the CT scan. The first doctor was like, oh, wow. I've never seen anything like that. That's pretty scary. You should go to the emergency room. That's what he said. And I'm like, I felt like saying, you're the doctor. But I didn't say anything like that. I wasn't rude. I was just like, but the emergency room cost me $100, and I'm not going to do that. There must be some other way through this network where I can go and just get a CT scan, because that's what he said. That's what they said I needed. And I had to argue with the guy for a while, and I finally got it. Little did I know, the $50 thing was waiting. He didn't know that. He didn't tell me. And the nurse that was a lot nicer than him didn't tell me.
Oh, no, trust me. They know that. They just wanted to know.
Well, anyway.
Because that goes, you know.
Last part of this article on these homelessness co-payments in L.A. Oh, they're, yeah. What is
I
that?
Go to
what is that word?
$150.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
What?
Yep.
I was like $150.
Yeah.
You know what? I think the pain went away. I'm let me get out of here.
And who came up with these words? You don't say co-payments and this and that. You should say extra fee, more money. You know what I mean? It's got to be really clear. I didn't even know what some of those things meant when they first started that stuff. I hear things about co-payments and I'm like, what does that mean? Co-payment.
Well, me, it's like...
Sounds nice.
Oh, well, I always thought I have to pay 20%. He's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, all you pay is a co-payment. And I'm like, okay, but don't I also pay 20%.
I pay... Oh, yeah, no, this is after...
She's like, oh, no, you got partners selected. You're an employee of Brigham, so no, that's 100%. All you pay is a co-payment.
That's not true. You have stuff coming out of your check every month, I bet you. Don't you?
Yeah, I'm still paying into
exactly.
it.
Exactly, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
She had me bamboozled. I'm like thinking about it.
Show her your paycheck.
I got home.
I'm going to start carrying a paycheck stuff around.
I got home and I started going.
Yeah.
Okay. Co-payment. I'm still going to deduct it. And there's no 20%. No. No. That doesn't make sense.
I have a family plan.
It just doesn't, you know.
It comes out of my check every check. A big chunk of money comes out of my check for that.
101.
And mine's a lot more than that. And I'm like, I don't mean that in a competitive way. I'm just saying it's more than that because it's a family plan. And
yeah, it's just me.
And then every check that comes out, and that plus the taxes, I'm like, the difference between my net pay and my gross pay. Gross pay is like what you make, what you're supposed to make before taxes and deductions for health care and stuff, which shouldn't exist, and dental care. I have like a $15,000 gap per year.
So between instead of making 50, my gross pay and my net pay, 33.
It's just horrible. It's just really, really horrible. And they also take and you know, you're paying this in, and then you're paying these extra fees with that nice word copay, or that stupid word copay. And now they're extending those to things like the scans and stuff. Pretty soon it's going to be like everything. And we're getting these things. Remember, I told you I had that discussion with a coworker, kind of a friend, about this thing, this co-pays, But what triggered that discussion, I didn't mention, what triggered it was I'm getting all these advertisements from my own health insurance company. He's in the same one, my own, I shouldn't even say that, from the health insurance company I'm forced to deal with. There, and there's only two choices where I work. So it's this rotten one or this other rotten one. So I'm in this one rotten one that the Charles, Sir Charles Baker used to run and make money off sick people on. Huge salaries off sick people, I should say, for Sir Charles Baker. The big fake that all the liberals vote for here in Massachusetts. It's unbelievable. Anyway, so...
Oh, no, it's believable. They're liberals, of course.
Sir Charles Faker. Yeah, as long as the Volvo runs, you know, everything's cool. Sir Charles Faker, they, you know, they have these fees that keep extending out to more and more stuff, and the percentage of the fees keeps going up. So the so-called co-pays, the extra fees, just to walk in the door, go up. Things that were never cost a fee before go up. But what I started to say was they're now advertising within their own, the number of people that are have to use their insurance, they're advertising to us constantly now to use a thing they call blah, blah, but it's basically shop around on your own. Do the work they should do to see if you can find a cheaper payment, a cheaper thing somewhere. So, like, for because they treat their own corporation like it's like a capitalist market or something, which is total bullshit. It's just arbitrary the way they want to do it. So if I can find a CT scan for like $49 somewhere, I should do that work myself. Well, just the premises there are mind-boggling. First of all, why is there any difference in the costs? Why aren't the costs just lower? Why are you spending money on this whole campaign to get us to do more work that you should do for us? Right, I'm getting stuff now like my doctor will give me a list of things to get checked out. I got to do them all myself. It's all DIY, right? So I go and start to...
So they get paid
so that
for doing nothing.
I have to call around and set everything up. I have to set everything up. Make sure there's a referral. Make sure the time, the place, all this stuff. It's too much. I'm too busy. I can't do it. I have a family to take care of, to help take care of, you know? And they want... So then I go back to the physical and say, no, I didn't get this done. I didn't get this done. I didn't get this done. Why? Because I don't have freaking time to do that. How do you get the time off from work, a lot of people? How do you do that? I mean, the healthcare system in this country is beyond a mess. It's torture. It's like flying, you know, worse than that. More important than that in some ways, a lot of ways. Anyway, blah, blah. So more about this article here. So authorities in Los Angeles and advocacy groups have been working out for more to put more protections in place for tenants. But these are significant challenges. Since 2001, 20,000 rent-controlled properties have been taken off the market. 20,000 in L.A. According to the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, or DUD, as we call it, the Los Angeles metropolitan area needs more than 500,000 affordable housing units to meet demand. You know it's probably 10 times more than that. Today, 1 in 3 renters pays more than half their income on housing. I don't know if that's nationwide or in L.A. More than half their income on housing.
That's got to be nationwide.
It probably is. Anyway, so as usual, running out of time here, but we'll jump into this article. This is going to sound a little bit random because I want to have more stuff on unions, but don't have time. But it's just, I like the, again, the headline caught my eye. To stay relevant, unions must get angry again. It's from June 5th, 2019, from something called Leo Weekly, which is a Midwestern, like something or other, magazine or paper online thing. They use a lot of funny swear words that I can't use because we're on the radio. So it says, this country's always been run by people who need a lot of work done by other people and would like to have that work cost as close to nothing as possible. Moral consequences be damned. From this, all things American must be understood. Sounds like being written by a socialist. What makes a good worker under this system, the kind who doesn't cost much, the kind who won't or can't demand much in exchange for their own sweat, the kind who will drop dead from doing the same thing every day for 30 years or more with minimal complaints. I work with people like that. The unwanted, the uneducated, the incarcerated, people mired in debt or desperate for whatever reason. But docile people above all. Over the past 2 centuries, and then they go into like, I'm going to skip this part. They talk about some minimal social programs like minimum wage, which is way behind, and stuff like that, unemployment insurance, all that. It doesn't get into why those things happened, but it talks about they exist. But they say it's not nearly enough, and people are so desperate for even crumbs that it keeps them more docile, as they say. Let's see. Let's see. Okay, this is an interesting point. The cost-benefit analysis, they're calling this, is critical to understanding how to affect change for workers. Throughout the 19th century, as the cost of slavery became too much, fear of insurrection, popular revolt, or outright civil war, American capitalists were moving into two different strategies, which were, one, put a lot of folks in prison where the 13th Amendment doesn't apply, and two, work the remaining poor and their children quite literally to death. The former strategy is still going strong. What made the latter cost too much? Workers who got together and formed unions. Yay. And I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what they go into. So it's no wonder that as wages stagnate, the gulf between rich and poor gets wider. Union membership is in decline based on repression and so on. But this whole cost-benefit analysis way of looking at things. In 2018, only 6% of private sector workers were union members, and overall union membership was an all-time low. They don't mention public sector, which is around 30%, but anyway. Even if membership were robust, most unions don't mess things up like they used to, we'll say. Since the 90s, top-down strategies that leave out rank-and-file workers have become the norm, leaving many workers confused about what exactly their unions do to deserve their fees. And thanks to grossly misnamed so-called right-to-work laws and the Supreme Court's opinion in Janus versus AFSCME, AFSCME's the union I'm in, which keeps unions from collecting certain fees, membership is likely to continue to decrease, and labor's influence is likely to decline for a while. Now, this is still debatable because you also see more strikes happening recently. I don't have any figures on organizing, but hopefully people will see the strikes that have been successful and want to be in a union. Hopefully the union leaders will put more into organizing. So far, they're not. In fact, I've read some articles that the head of the AFL-CIO now, who started out in American terms a tiny bit progressive, Trumpka, he used to be head of the mine workers union. He now has...
That's West Virginia, right?
Yeah. He now is the head of the AFL-CIO and apparently not putting much into organizing, not pushing organizing much, which is crazy. Your unions have to always be organizing.
Are they the ones forming a new labor party, so to speak?
No, they're not.
Okay. No. That's a different,
that was back in the 90s.
People.
There was noise about that from them. I mean, they might have been involved, but I don't remember them being involved directly. They should be, and it still should happen. Workers are the reasons why companies make make profits. They deserve to be treated with respect, have a voice, and a share in monies made. UAW local vice president Derek Cronin says out in Bedford, Indiana. Companies like Amazon have perfected how to keep workers on the edge of poverty, but pay them just enough to keep them from rising up and organizing, said Brian Trafford, a member of Teamsters Local 89 in Louisville. If the workers get too upset in a given workplace and try to each day an organizing drive, the company usually throws them a small bone. Now, there was just a union organizing drive in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Did you read about this? UAW, just yesterday. Yeah, mm-hmm. And it lost. And there was a lot of hope for it because the vote wasn't that lopsided, although they did lose in enough that they can't even appeal. Like it was like a plant had like a 1,700 and or 1,500 or 1,400 and 700 something voted for the union. 800 voted against it or maybe the opposite. I don't know. I have to double check that. But it didn't seem to be that much of a blowout, but it was enough, more than enough, unfortunately, to keep the union out this time. And the analysis I read in Labor Notes, which is a magazine about the labor movement, talked about they didn't prepare the workers for the good cop, bad cop thing, that the company would try to portray itself as really nice and everything. And give them they gave them T-shirts and stuff. They also didn't get enough other unions or the community involved enough. There was a lot of problems with the organizing drive, unfortunately. So basically, they're saying in this article, unions have to do more to go back to striking, go back to messing stuff up, as they say. Now, how can non-union folks help? There's a few general principles. So these are ABC. They're very simplistic, but I'll just mention them. First, don't cross picket lines, but you could help to show up and walk picket lines with if you see one, but don't cross them. Second, if you're a worker, consider joining or even starting a union in your workplace. Quote, people often assume unions are only for factory workers, but that's simply not true. Unions represent service workers, white-collar workers, digital media workers, and more. Any talk of union where you work? Spread it and get studying the union. Good.
Oh yeah.
Third, support.
We're waiting for that contract Sodexo has with us. Yep, we don't need you no more.
Third, support politicians who are pro worker. Now this implies Democrats. I don't agree. But anyway, Yeah. So let's hope.
And then the nurses are unionized yep. where I'm at. So.
Oh yeah, I know. Good. I thought so.
I get a lot from them.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought that. I read that article, thought it was going to be a little hard, more hard-hitting than it ended up being, but it was pretty good.
Then you have the engineers who go, my union's in bed with management.
Oh, no. Operating engineers?
Yeah, the mechanics, people that go around.
That's the operating engineers, probably.
Yeah. Like, you know, if there's a flood or something, they're the ones that both go.
Yeah, my union leadership's in bed with management, too, and it's a drag, but it's always better to have a union than not have one, you know? But so then we talked about earlier about Sanders' speech. And there's a magazine called Left Voice that has a pretty good article. It ended up in different places. I saw it on Facebook. I don't really have... Oh, yeah, they have leftvoice.org you could go to. June 13th, Juan Cruz Ferre talking about Sanders' recent speech about... what is democratic socialism? He gave a similar speech in 2016. For time's sake, I'll just say they're very, very similar speeches, equaling not democratic socialism. Sanders talked about, and so what does this mean? I am saying personally, people should not vote for Sanders as long as he's in the Democratic Party. If he breaks with the Democrats, runs in it as an independent, especially if he's trying to build a party bigger than himself, but I would support Sanders. I would vote for him as an independent.
I don't see that
but
happening.
I don't either. That's a wish fulfillment thing. In 2016, people made that demand on him, including in Social Alternative. It didn't happen. Now I think he's doubled down on the Democratic Party. He always was part of it. De facto, he was part of the Democratic Party since 1992.
Well, it's funny. He was interviewed on Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, right after the fact. Trump's in, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And they put him as independent socialist.
So that's a trick he does.
So
where,
I said,
yeah.
Oh, now you're independent. Yeah. Now that, you know, the whole show is over.
Right.
Now he's going back instead of sticking to that title.
Yeah.
Now he's going back to the Democrat.
Yes.
You know.
He has to join the Democratic Party to be in the Democratic Party primary, which he did in 2015 or whatever, and he did now recently in 2018 or 17. Now, but that's superficial because he's already been working with them. He's already caucused with them. Howard Dean, a Democrat from Vermont, Democrat leader from Vermont, said that Sanders votes for Democratic policies more than most Democrats do, meaning he's totally up the butt of the Democratic Party in terms of how he votes. And he also took the just almost chairmanship. Like I think he's a vice chairman on some big committee. For years they've been giving him committee appointments. And if some person dies, he's going to be head of like a very powerful finance committee or something. I'll have to look up the details on that. That stems from a 1992 agreement he made with the Democratic Party tops, the DNC, when he was at Harvard Kennedy School on a sabbatical or something, or some sort of study for a year. And Sanders made a deal with the Democrats that basically was like, you don't run anybody against me in Vermont, and I will support your national candidate in Vermont. And they stuck to that deal. And I think some of that deal was also getting committee assignments and stuff like that. Or that just worked itself out. Once Sanders was in Congress, he blocked with the Democrats, and they gave him awards for that. So it's not like he's never been a Democrat. He's always been a Democrat. Since that time, since 1992, he's always been a Democrat. And even as far back as 1984, he was supporting Democrats. He supported Mondale in the 1984 election. So to call anyone that's in the Democratic Party a socialist is a joke. Now, a lot of people would disagree with me on that, including some people in Social Alternative, but for a real Marxist, a real socialist, anybody in the Democratic Party, they've chosen to be in a bourgeois political party, a corporate political party, so as long as they're in there, they're not a socialist. If they leave and start acting like a real socialist some point in the future, that's different. Sanders was a socialist, I think, way back in the 70s. Not anymore. So it's no coincidence that when he gives these speeches like he did in 2016, he did the other day, this article is from June 13th, when he talks about democratic socialism, he's basically trying to sell liberalism as democratic socialism. And by doing that, he's miseducating people. He's strengthening the Democratic Party and doing a disservice. He's just intellectually dishonest, basically, on top of that. He used to talk about Debs. Now, to talk about Debs as a Democrat is a bit of a crime, I'd say. Misdemeanor, maybe, but not a good thing. He doesn't even talk about Debs anymore. And I read in some article by CBS News, and it wasn't from this thing, But I'm really happy. So I used to say this to people. You probably heard me say this. Sanders doesn't bring up democratic socialism unless they talk to him about it. I've said that on the show many times. Yeah, that's really true.
He dodges the issue a lot.
He doesn't even bring unless it up. He doesn't bring it up.
But if they bring it up, he has no choice but to,
right.
You know.
If they bring it up, he'll say something about it, usually something stupid, like, oh, that's, I'm just talking about what's in Scandinavia. I'm talking about, like, he does in his speech. I'm talking about FDR. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, 1930s Democrat, you know, New Deal, supposed, all that stuff. But, you know, that's what he refers to as, you know, Scandinavian countries, they're not socialist. FDR was not a socialist. FDR bragged about saving capitalism. For the capitalists, Scandinavia is pure, is just capitalist countries. So it does not help anyone to spread ignorance like that. It does not help anyone to strengthen the Democratic Party, any working people. And yet, we got tons of people supporting Sanders, even people that call themselves socialists, even groups that call themselves socialists are supporting Sanders. And it's a huge, huge mistake. It's fine to deal with Sanders. It's fine to go to his supporters and say, hey, Sanders is raising, finally, some things we have been raising for a while. Like the Greens started the Green New Deal. The labor movement started at 15 now. Sanders now agrees with these things, he says. Great. If you agree with those things, join us in fighting for them. You're not going to get them through the Democratic Party. And we're not going to support Sanders as long as he's a Democrat. Well,
it's going to get watered down.
No, I won't even get anywhere. Won't get anywhere. Something like Green New Deal. I mean, it's what it's supposed to really be. And even Cortez's plan includes a lot of corporations and stuff. So, yeah, it'll be watered down, but I don't think it also won't approach what it implies.
Yeah.
You know, huge, massive public works doing green technologies and stuff. And I think it also implies a way out under capitalism, and there isn't one for that stuff, for the environment. Anyway, so he doesn't mention Debs in this speech he made the other night. He did mention some of the issues that, you know, you can engage Sanders supporters on, in my opinion, that are good issues, like tuition-free public college, $15 minimum wage, Medicare for all. I'm not sure I like the Medicare for all thing. I kind of prefer, like, health care for everyone, or health care for all, or even universal health care. That's a little thing. They come up with these, like, overly complex terms.
No, let's do like the British did.
Single payer, I hate.
British.
What'd they say?
National Health Care Service. That's
it. National Health Service.
Done. After
for
Churchill, get out of here. Yeah, yeah. We're going to do it our way. That's it.
Yeah, I agree
funded
with that.
That's it. National Health Care Service
is a better way.
It's just direct.
I would even prefer, though, health care for everyone.
Even better than, I don't know about France, but I think in that sense. Right? Yeah. But French is what? Is it a National Health Care Service?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Just simple.
Yeah.
Right to the point.
But I would prefer, like, healthcare for all, because that even takes out the national thing. That gets me a little nervous. In fact, Sanders, speaking of that, he talked about national unity to fight fascism. Well, how about just working class unity or something? Because national unity is what the fascists want. Anyway.
That was part of the Nazi, not National Socialist Workers Party.
Yeah, yeah.
Watch out.
They were into national unity. So watch how you pull that patriot card. I mean, that's the thing with the wars. You know, they come up with this thing in Iran. It's obviously a fake thing. It's going to be...
The whole Iranian?
Yeah, yeah. There's different...
Boxy wars.
There's different... One narrative is it's missiles, the other it's mines, it's Japanese freighters, it's all this. And the more information you get, the more it unravels. But how many wars have Americans fallen for, right? Remember the Spanish-American War, 1898?
Gulf of Tonkin.
Yeah, I can't
even pronounce it.
There was World War One, I think, the sinking of the Lusitania, which was a real thing.
But the Germans.
That was a thing to go into war. There might have been something else in World War One. The Mayaguez incident.
World War II was Pearl Harbor that got
That was real, but I mean, it was in a lot of ways predictable. A lot of people are writing about that now. The Mayaguez incident, the weapons of mass destruction. There's always these excuses for going into war, and most of the time they're fabricated, they're fake. And so the way they get people to snap into obedience is the brainwashing we get from an early age on patriotism, on nationalism. And I know people would disagree with me on this. They think patriotism is a positive thing, and I understand that some people define patriotism in a different way than just snapping to attention for a war, right? They might define it as care for people around you or care for your community or something. Well, we better find better words for that, because patriotism is really nationalism, and nationalism is really you're better than other people because you live in this country, and that's not true. You're better where you're born. Like, you can control where you're born, and that certain countries, the people are better than people in other countries. It's people are people around the whole world, you know? And then, on top of that, they use that brainwashing you get from day one, Pledge of Allegiance.
So what happens when you...
Star Spangled Banner. Let me finish the thought real quick. Yeah. That when they just push a few buttons around war, people say, oh, I have to go. I have to do my duty. I have to do my service. No, you don't. You have no duty to rich people and their oil. You have no duty to the corporations making sure they can exploit the rest of the world with oil. You know, that's not your duty. That's not. That's just something they brainwashed you with. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's like Marx at one time. He's like, I'm a man without a country.
Yeah.
Because, you know, from France, from being in England, he ended up in England.
Yeah, they chased him.
They didn't
him.
Want him in Germany.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Then he went to France.
Yeah.
Then he went to England. He was a man without a country.
Yeah, we're going to have to get into that next time because we're running out of time. We had that whole thing on Marx.
And that happened to Leon Trotsky, too.
Yep, exactly. Yep. So anyways, this article, 14 references to FDR and the Democrats, none to Eugene Debs. Basically, the last time he did this, he was even bringing up Johnson, Kennedy, and Teddy Roosevelt. So this time he hasn't done that. But FDR. Now he's continuing with the FDR shtick. I don't know if he mentioned, I didn't watch the video yet. I don't know if he mentioned Scandinavia or not. Sliding in polls, Sanders understands he needs, I'm quoting here, to soften his radical edge and increase his electability. He stressed that FDR was accused of being a socialist. Now that's kind of putting socialism in a negative light. And Medicare was called a socialist program. And that even Bill Clinton's health care plan was berated as socialist. Then he approvingly, this is Sanders, quoted Harry Truman as saying, socialism is the epithet they have hurled at every advance we have made in the last 20 years. And Truman was horrible. So the subtext of all this is clear. Don't fear socialism as a label, but contradictorily, it's kind of a negative thing is the implication there as well. Let's see. So they say, yes, he still has his progressive platform, but he's doing it through the Democratic Party. One thing bad about their articles, they don't talk about building a workers' party, but they, you know, they deconstruct basically what Sanders was basically trying to do is reframe democratic socialism as liberalism. And it ends the article saying, we need to be clear about our vision of a social society, one without exploitation and oppression. This involves socializing the resources that are now monopolized by the capitalist class, putting all the productive forces at the service of the common good and not to satisfy the greed of a handful of people. Climate change, huge economic inequalities, and the global rise of the far right demand bold action, a clear definition of our goals. Let's not begin by compromising. And here the compromise is redefining democratic socialism as basically Democratic Party liberalism. And then I just happened to find, as I was doing some research, in Vermont, there's this whole thing in a town in Vermont where Sanders refuses to speak out. In fact, wanted these F-35 jets to come into Burlington International Airport, and they're screwing with people in the surrounding areas. At community meetings, not one person from the airport. I'm sorry, that was something different. So they're petitioning Sanders to come out against. They say, quote, though you dodge questions related to the F-35s, your few public responses primarily rationalize the basic decision based on economic and job grounds. Please explain to us the people who will soon live in homes considered unsuitable for residential use because of these F-35s. Why are children's health and safety, why are home values, why are community matter less than an undefined number of military jobs? See, that's not the right way to go about it. They should talk about other ways to get jobs. But anyways, you could have used your political power to secure a mission for the National Guard that would be appropriate for densely populated residential area, but instead chose to advocate for the basing of a new and loud military aircraft in our community, ignoring the concerns of the most affected families. That's Woonsocket, South Burlington. They've all passed resolutions voicing opposition to the basing of F-35s in our community. You claim to be a voice for the people that you are listening. Are you listening to us, or can you not hear us over the jet noise? And the reason I raise that is I agree with those people. They don't need F-35s in Vermont, but also because they are, it shows on issues of, however you want to phrase this, I would say imperialism, but we could break it down, say the military, foreign policy, stuff like that. Sanders is not good at all. He's very much in support of a lot of imperialist projects. He votes sometimes against and speaks against some of these fake wars they try to start, but then he'll vote, some of them he doesn't, and some of them he'll vote for the, even in the fake wars, he'll vote for increased military spending. So anyway, two things we had to leave out today, this really good stuff on Shama Sawant, and we'll do it next time. Go to, it's called 5 Years Ago We Made History, go to shamasawant.org. It's just basically a very good summary of victories by the socialist city councilor, member of Socialist Alternative, Shama Sawant. And also this article, Karl Marx, 200th anniversary, the world is finally ready for Marxism as capitalism reaches the tipping point. I say often we'll go into something next week and we don't get to it. I'm going to write down the next show's date here and we're going to get into these next time.
So the first two items.
Yeah, we're going to have to start wrapping up. I'm sort of rounding up. What's this song we're going to go
it's
out
called
on?
Called If It Ain't Rough.
Number 4?
By MC Ren and NWA. Yes, number 4.
Okay. And also, any last words, Diego? Thanks for being able to come in. It's great.
Thank you.
Hope you can make it next time.
I will.
Yep.
Power to the people, like always. And don't believe the hype. All right? We're not at war with Iran yet. I hope not.
Well, you said something off air that was really good. You said, Diego mentioned that in Cuba, apparently the people are on a war footing right now. They're like old veterans are being called back into service.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, why? I wanted to know what the exact trigger was, but you put it in a good context.
His experience during the missile crisis kind of like, see, in Cuba, they always respect their elders, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you always say, well, we need that experience of, you know, because the new generation hasn't suffered that kind of an actuality of the Bay of Pigs or some kind of like real aggressive, you know, mm-hmm. period mm-hmm. since. So that kind of experience needs, it's taught.
Mm-hmm.
So he got what's the word? How will you say that here?
Reactivated.
Reactivated. Yeah, something to that effect.
Something weird they'd say here.
it's a situation in Cuba where we're war footing. It's economic war against.
But the way you put it, and we got to put this real quick. The way you put it was because of Venezuela, the attacks on Venezuela, sanctions and all that. The threat taking away rights of visitation to Cuba and travel to Cuba.
Yes.
Iran. I mean, you gave it this all these things all at
which
once.
Which is something that the last administration accomplished, and now this administration is demolishing it.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll talk more about that next time. We're going to go out with that song. What's it called again?
If It Ain't Rough.
If It Ain't Rough. Thanks, Diego, for showing up. That's great. Join us, listeners, next time. Go to Facebook, Socialist Alternative Radio on Facebook. We share a lot of content on that. Put up some original stuff every once in a while. And also, check out socialistalternative.org. And also, check out our show in 2 weeks, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. live. Or go to schedules. Check out the last show, hopefully archived properly. And we'll see you soon. Check out, get deeper into what is revolutionary socialism, what is real socialism. And we'll go out on those words
if it ain't rough.
If it ain't rough. Okay, if it ain't rough.
Ren is the villain and you're just a hostage. So whenever I'm stepping, cover your head like an ostrich. Groupies been waiting for this, suckers been hating for this. You know why? Cause so many y'all relating to this. Jealous is how they're feeling intentionally, but then start to love it because I made it eventually. Pumping the music, I keep the music like pumping. Cause Ren ain't in it for nothing, I keep the average crowd jumping. Yo, you know the color, the villain's in black. Always down to make noise and attack. So you better get back, unless you wanna come with it. And make your face like a target and close your eyes when I hit it. You're screaming with fear, but it's with fear that you're screaming. You're waking up in a sweat, cause Ren is giving bad dreams. And I'm not scheming, I'm just telling the facts. That's how it is when in WA starts to jack. So brothers, they wanna scrap with me. The squeezing and sneezing won't last a lap with me. Especially begging to write some lyrics with me. I just snatch your girl to take a nap with me. Cause when it comes to Ren, it's no comparison. And if you try to be me, it's quite embarrassing. But I understand cause you're mentally slow. Cause I can tell from the jump, you're too nervous to go.
If it ain't rough, it ain't me. Nate in black and he's about to attack. If it ain't bust a freestyle then.
I bet.
I can tell that you're afraid to fight me. Simple because you lost the crowd. And they had to invite me because your sweat is a puddle. But they're the puddles of sweat. I'm a threat, so get a cold rag and wipe your neck. And clean the dirt off your face to cause acne. It's ridiculous thinking that you can jack me. This is the round where the punch will go. Until your H-E-A-D that's known as a blow. I'm making a point, but it's a point that I'm making. Like, see, I'm hating the fake and I keep the suckers like shaking. Scared to speak with a thought when they're chosen. The sound of my voice in their ear and they're frozen. This is a battle to the death, it's like the same old. Against a brother on a tip with a cane go. Giving them pain, but it's with pain that I'm